Hi, it's Dave Mattson, co-author of Sandler Enterprise Selling, Winning, Growing, and Retaining Major Accounts. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's actually working in the quickly changing field of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you are a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Dave Mattson to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about the book he has co-authored with Brian Sullivan, Sandler Enterprise Selling, Winning, Growing, and Retaining Major Accounts. Dave Mattson is the CEO and president of Sandler Training, the largest global provider of sales and management training in the world, with over 250 operating units in more than 32 countries. Dave first met the famous founder of Sandler Training, David Sandler, in 1986, went to work for him in 1988, and was eventually chosen to lead the company. And, interesting fact, Dave once owned a painting company. Dave, congratulations on Sandler Enterprise Selling, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, full disclosure for the listener, I have been a Sandler customer for, gosh, I think 15 years now. I had started my business in 2001 and banged my head against the wall trying to, you know, sell agency services. And I thought, you know, there's probably some sort of coaching or training I could get that would make, you know, banging my head against the wall a little bit easier. And I went to the local franchise and I met Brad McDonald, who now works for Sandler Corporate, and got a lot of training from him. And I guess after you pay for a couple of years, at least back then, you just stop paying. You just keep coming. And I'm one of those people that cannot go to all-you-can-eat buffets because I would just never leave. So over the years, Brad sold his franchise to Chad Stencil and David Henshaw, and now they're stuck with me. They haven't made a nickel off me. I show up every week for training and drink their coffee. But anyway, I wanted to thank Chad for helping to set this up. So just so everybody knows that I'm a Kool-Aid drinking Sandler person.
There you go. Full disclosure, right?
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. So this is the Marketing Book Podcast. I have to have this sales book disclaimer. I love having books and authors on who've written books about sales, because the more knowledgeable marketing people are about sales, the more successful they will be, period, full stop. Particularly now versus even 5 years ago, and even more so in the future. If they don't understand sales, the sales process, and the way their customers are buying, they're going to be increasingly less successful as marketing people. And because I've been in Sandler world, reading the book for me was kind of like coming home. Because the first part, you touch on some of the basics of the Sandler system. And before we start talking about Sandler's enterprise selling system, I wanted to ask you to explain the concept of the famous Sandler submarine.
Okay, so Sandler submarine, that was an analogy or a visual that David used very early on because he watched a Humphrey Bogart movie. And what he saw when the submarine went down and let's say, you know, an explosion happened, the water's coming through the submarine, all the sailors would run to the next compartment and seal the door because they were out of that compartment into this compartment, which was safe. And so he said, hey, wait a minute now. Salespeople, they don't actually go from compartment to compartment. They go in whatever direction that the prospect pulls them. And so we could use that as a visual to explain, hey, don't jump to presentation, which is in the back of the submarine, until we've really had qualification done with pain money decision up front. So he taught people to go step by step through a process. That doesn't mean be robotic, but to really make sure that you've gotten all the information necessary so you can decide if they're qualified. and if you want to invest the time and energy into a presentation. So we have seven steps. The first step would be establish rapport. People buy from people, and they're going to buy from people who they like and trust. So, you know, we always believe our product is the number one thing that sells. And I don't believe that. I don't think that the prospect knows your product as well as you do anyways. I think what they're looking for is, do you know what my issue is? And do I believe and trust that you can solve my issue? So we teach a bunch of stuff up front that helps make that connection. Then we move to the second compartment, which we call upfront contracts. And that's really to set the stage for our interaction. You know, sales is a conversation, Douglas. And in my opinion, if you and I don't set the ground rules, then how are you going to participate? You're just going to kind of listen to the salesperson lead the call, and you're always waiting for the tricky close. And so Sandler said, hey, just put it up on the front. So he would say, you walk up and you say five things. Here's the purpose of the call. Hey, how much time do we have? Just so you're validating that. And then we cover. So Douglas, what are the two or three things that you want to cover when we're here together today? And so I'm getting my buyer's agenda, because psychologically you are engaged if you know that I know what you want and I've said I'm going to cover it. And then I say, as the seller, here are the two or three things that I want to cover in today's meeting. And then we talk about the last thing, which everyone cringes on, but it's so important, which is outcome. You know, so, hey, listen, if we have a great conversation, you know, here's some potential next steps that we can talk about at the end. And you actually go through them. And what he had found is by telling people what you want them to decide at the end of the meeting, before you start the meeting, people actually pay close attention to the meeting. They're engaged. They're asking good questions because they know that something's coming, versus the amateur salespeople who do that trial close in 54 minutes into the call. So, Douglas, you know, based on where you are,
on a scale of 0 to 10. Yeah,
exactly. And they're like, what happened? So then we move into pain, which is for non-Sandler people, let's say that's need. And so we say people buy emotionally, justify their decisions intellectually. And so what's really the pain that your prospect is having? It's not that they waited for you to show up because your product is awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, you solve a problem. What is the problem that they are experiencing that your product can solve?
And the problem they give you is very seldom... The real problem. Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, well, most of us, even though the internet today, we think we're, you know, hyper-educated, we probably are working on symptoms, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, I've got a service problem. Well, okay. So Sandler-trained person would say, well, let's go back a couple of steps. What actually causes that service problem? And then we're dealing with the whole issue. And we really try to get a couple different pains on the table, and we try to get impact, which is, so is this even a big deal? I mean, what's it costing the company, and how is it affecting you personally, Douglas? And that's a real, you know, great piece of information, great conversation, because it tells you how serious they are. And I've had a lot of people say, honestly, it's not even in my top three. Now that I think about it, things, my initiatives, I said, well, thank goodness. Let's put this off until it is. I would have wasted how many hours and how much money chasing something that really wasn't that important to a prospect. Really. So it's awesome. Once we cover that, we go into the next compartment, and that's budget. So based on the impact, if you have two or three problems, and collectively that's going to be $1 million, and I'll just try to figure out, do you have a budget set aside to attack that problem? And you know, they could say a number of different things, but we're taught, before you present, deal with money. Because in the Sandler world, qualification is pain, money, and decision. And so we deal with money up front. I mean, I think most times salespeople deal with money after the presentation, because I want you to be wowed. Like, isn't that so cool that you're going to pay anything for this thing? You know, and so we say, that's probably not true, right? And so we deal with money. And then we go to our next step, which is decision. And you deal with all the stuff that has to do with decisions. How are they made? When are they made? You know, who makes them? All
that
stuff.
Are they even capable of making a decision?
Exactly. Exactly. Everyone can say no. Very few people can say yes, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so once we've done that, we say, okay, well, let's see if we have this now. Here are your pains. here's your budget, which, you know, here's your decision process. And let's assume that I had a service that fixes those pains within the budget. And I liked what you said about the decision, and we've negotiated that. Then I say, let's move to our sixth step in the Sandler selling system, which is fulfillment. And that's really presentation for the outside world. But we call it fulfillment because we don't think that you should do a full-blown dog and pony show. If you have an hour and you have 675 slides on your deck, that's a long day at the watering hole, right? Especially when the first 38 minutes are about the history of your company. Who really cares? I mean, they just care. Do you know my problem? Can you solve it? What's going on? You know. So we teach them to just fulfill. How are you going to solve the pains? And we teach them a bunch of things on how to do that and how to close throughout the conversation. And then our last step, Douglas, as you know, as a longtime client, is called post-sell. And post-sell does two big things for the listeners. One is it deals with buyer's remorse, because regardless, we all second guess our decisions after we make a decision, like, hey, could I have gotten a better deal? Is this the right time? Is this the right company? We all do it. And then the second thing that it does is it gets referrals. It deals with the referral process, because we're big believers. You don't have to have a year's worth of history in order to ask for referrals. And then we also transition, if you have a delivery team, like you most definitely have one in enterprise selling, you hand it off from sales to delivery. So that's the process that we follow. And it's transactional, or it's consultative. It can take you a day, an hour, or a year to go through that. So we have trained literally millions of people on that system over the last 50 years.
And you know, I know it works, because when I haven't used it, or I veered from it, or let's say I didn't get a client that we were going after, one of those compartments was leaking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? We get so excited when they're excited, right? When they're excited, we're like, this, obviously they're a buyer. And then we just throw all of the stuff that we should be doing off to the side because we're excited. And yeah, then we wake up and say, oh my gosh, what did I do?
Right. And that's the importance of having a post-mortem after a sale, yep, which we'll talk about in a minute. So let me just read one quick excerpt from the beginning of the book. What is enterprise selling? When we use the phrase enterprise selling in this book, we mean selling into organizations that present any of the following challenges to the selling team: extended sales cycles, sophisticated competition, significant financial investment in pursuits, cross-functional teams, a focus on long-term business value rather than short-term pricing, wide, diverse buyer networks, complex decision structures, and a highly diversified organization and footprint. So, Dave, in the book, you write that enterprise selling is to traditional selling as chess is to checkers. How so?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if we achieve and do the seven steps, most people will, even though our seven steps of the submarine are baked into enterprise selling, I think most people look at sales as the interaction that I have with a buyer or a prospect, right? So that's when the sale happens. Enterprise selling says, look, that is true, but there's an awful lot of things that have to happen beforehand and also after the fact. And enterprise selling is geared towards having a long-term relationship with your buyer, who's your customer. All the time, you're setting the environment up, the stage, to have the ability, the right, to sell additional products and services. So in enterprise selling, it never ends. Whereas some sales models, you know, it's there's a start and finish. Where in this model, it never really ends, because I'm going to be living with you, I'm going to be supporting you, and hopefully when you have a future need, I've done a great job, and we, you know, we've got this relationship, and you're going to buy from me versus the competition. That's the big difference.
Mm-hmm. Explain what you mean when you say there are no anvil sales in enterprise selling.
Oh, well, you know, look, if you have a short term, you were talking about transactional sale now.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, first of all,
an anvil is something you buy maybe once in a generation.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think that for us, you could have a once in a time lifetime sale, but in essence, most people aren't going to set up a multinational, right? You know, how many times am I selling now where I've got representatives from so many different countries, because organizations are making a decision for the organization, whereas years ago, Douglas, they would make a decision just for this group and that group, and it was disjointed. Mm-hmm. That's no longer true. So if I go from a bigger picture to answer the question specifically, this is more buyers. I don't think it takes me a team to sell an anvil. I just don't believe it. And I'm also going to make sure that I've gauged what does it take for you to be 100% satisfied. You know, how am I going to go deep and wide within the organization so I can sell more of my products and services? And, you know, we do, how do I determine what the wallet share is? Because most salespeople, and you and I both know this, are so happy when they get that $1 million sale. And then they're shocked or they don't care because they don't want to ruffle up their $1 million sale, that they're spending $25 million in other areas that they could service with their competition. But the salesperson's high fine, they got a $1 million sale. But you know, they've left $24 million on the table, but more importantly, that they've exposed themselves for a competitor just to swipe them out of there. And that's just a whole different mindset.
Yeah. And also in the book, you talk about how secrecy amongst an enterprise sales group can be fatal.
It can.
People keeping to themselves the information that they've gathered, which might mm-hmm. be helpful to the rest of the larger team. So the Sandler Enterprise selling model is based on 6 stages, which I'll mention here, and we'll ask a couple questions about some of them. One is territory and account planning. 2 is opportunity identification. 3 is qualification. 4 is solution development. 5 is proposing and advancement. And 6 is service delivery. So in terms of the territory and account planning, what are some of the things that enterprise sellers should be looking at and often ignore at their own peril in terms of understanding that market?
Well, I think a couple things. Most times the territory plan is done once a year. It takes you a lot of time. You did it for management. You keep it in your car so you know where it is in case they ask you for it, right? You have to dust it off, that right. type of thing. So we're saying, hey, why don't we do 90-day account plans? And let's come up with actionable steps to move either the deal forward and or my relationship forward. And we'll go in and say all clients are not made equal. Right? So they're not equal. And we have something called CARE, K-A-R-E, and we help salespeople, organizations, segment their client list or their prospects. So K is for keep. What clients within your territory, within your accounts, are just, they're profitable, they love you, you love them, everything's going great, you want to protect them, right? Because salespeople have 2 basic functions in life, if we were to strip all the other stuff out. It's, I've got to protect and grow my relationships, and I've got to plunder somebody else's. I mean, it's kind of safe. I mean, it's true. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing a good job protecting and growing, somebody else is going to do it for you. So here it's, what K is for keep, A is for attain. What accounts within my territory do I want to go get? They're on my target list. R is recapture. We've lost them. We used to do business with them. Maybe it was a management change or was an issue, whatever. I'm going to go back after them. And E is for expand. We're doing business with them, but we should be able to grow them. And so we help people say, which of these accounts, which, you know, these names fit your accounts, and they've never thought about it before. And then we say, well, you should have different strategies for an expand account than you would an attain account. And how much time should you be spending in these areas? And we really help them systematize where they should spend their time, what their activities should be within those particular accounts, whether they have a customer or whether they want to get a customer.
Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it's no more the spraying and praying. It's really kind of thinking this through, and it's a fairly simple concept, the K-A-R-E. But it seems like you could fill up a whole whiteboard with companies that you had forgotten about or that make sense. And in terms of the ones that you need to keep, a lot of yours are on somebody else's attain group.
Exactly, right? And you know, the thing is, Douglas, how many of our listeners spend a disproportionate amount of time on the keeps, and management doesn't even pay attention to it? They don't know that.
Yeah.
Whereas you could create, hey, I want you to spend X amount of time, and I'm not going to tell you which accounts, but spend 30% of your time on keeps. I want you to spend 30% on attains. I want you to spend, you know, 40% on expands. And if you can do that, then the salespeople actually have some guardrails that they need to operate within on. And then you have a healthy portfolio versus you hit your revenue number, maybe, but you only did a fraction of what your company actually represents. So the company necessarily didn't win. You hit your commission number, but that's about it.
Yeah. The next thing I wanted to ask you about was, I thought, really applicable to marketers, and that is territory value propositions. That's where you connect the dots between what you do well and the accounts you target. And I was wondering if you could walk the listeners through the what you call the four value arrows you use to develop one of these territory value propositions.
Sure. Well, so the value prop is really, it's the building block, right, that takes you really from, you know, what you do well and what accounts that you should target. There's four big things. One is when we have this, and you'll fill it in. So when we have sales training, right, we will be able to, that's your second big bucket. So when I have this, we will be able to, that's my second bucket. Then I slate into my third bucket, which is, which means our organization will benefit by. And then our fourth one is, and we'll measure the improvement through. So if you can answer those things and you can create, hey, when we have this, all right, so when we have sales training.
This is what the customer's saying.
Yeah, but you're saying it as the salesperson. Mm-hmm. So you can put yourself into, what are we actually selling? Because if I'm creating a 30-second commercial, Douglas, that really is, who are you? What types of customers do you call on? What benefits, you know, or pains do you solve for them? And most people do a 30-second commercial when they show up and throw up. My company's been in business since 1911, you know, and my grandfather, all that stuff.
Right.
No one cares. What this does is it talks to them in a way that says, here, let me look at it from your perspective. Let me look at it through your lens. And so that is really the key on how we get all that stuff done. And this just is a format for people to follow. It's great for marketers to do. We've had a lot of marketing groups go through and say, hey, we need to kind of change the way that we're doing our marketing, not from a benefit perspective, but how about a problem-solving pain perspective? So it's a light bulb.
Amen. Amen. That's great. So on the second one, the opportunity identification, it covers lots of areas, and one of them are about prospecting, which is very popular. And I want to ask you, Dave Mattson, why are bats the key to prospecting success?
BATs?
Yes, BATS or BATs, okay. Yes.
So that stands for, in Sandler language.
Yes. It was a little inside Sandler lingo there for the listener.
That's behaviors, attitudes, and techniques. So when it comes to, we'll use prospecting. When it comes to prospecting, everybody's looking for the technique. Hey, give me the line to get past the gatekeeper. What do I say to get a referral on LinkedIn? So, you know, it's the what do I say, the slick moves. And Sandler's got great technique for sure. But what we also say at Sandler is that technique by itself isn't sustainable, right? Because I'll even use dieting. I know what I'm supposed to not eat. I can't have 7 slices of chocolate cake. I got it. Okay. But what the difference is, how you sustain it, is the other two legs of the stool, which are behaviors and attitudes. So, and I'll do each one quickly with prospecting in mind. So the attitude, what's your mindset? I think success, 80% of it resides between your ears, right? And so we may have an attitude or a script that says, don't talk to strangers because that's what your parents told you. Oh, I'm only a salesperson. How would I call on a senior executive? Oh, I'm interrupting them. Whatever you've talked yourself in, you've rationalized why it's not going to work out or why it is going to work out. So your attitude has to be one of things like, hey, I've got equal business stature. I've got the cure to cancer. I mean, I owe it to this person to make sure that they truly understand what I'm doing after I understand their issues. And if you looked at it differently, for instance, most people take rejection and they get crushed because in cold calling, let's just say it's outbound dialing. Let's just even do that for a second. You could dial the phone 99 times before you actually got an appointment. And people are saying, oh my gosh, it's rejection. All right, well, that's one attitude. But how about this? If you were looking for a green gumball in one of those, you know, those gumball machines that our kids have always asked for the quarter, right? Mm-hmm. And if you got a red one the first time, what would you say? Oh, I'll try again. Then you got a yellow one, and then you got another red one. You would say, who cares? But you're looking for the green one. So if you look for, hey, I'm only looking for 1 out of 100 to say yes, versus I've just got killed 99% of the time, everything kind of changes. Mm-hmm. And so your headset's there. And then B is for behavior. I believe, and you know this from 15 years, I think Sandler, we teach people how to become behavioralists. Because in prospecting, you know, you just don't want to prospect the last day of the month and get your 30 days in. I believe that if you did a little bit each and every day, first of all, it's less painful. You will become more successful. And that way I don't have to, you know, just kind of put it at the last minute. And I'll even do running for a minute. If I knew I had to run 20 miles a week, and I say to myself, hey, the first day, it's pretty cold out here. I'm not going to run. And second day, I say, hey, guess what? Wow, it's raining, you know? And then Friday comes, and it's just like cold calling. I haven't made a call. I haven't even run. I hate running, and I hate cold calling. So mm-hmm. What do I say on a Friday? Hey, Douglas, let's just start fresh next week. But I mean, why are we going to just do it? This is painful. And then we put it off for next week.
Yeah, I'm laughing to keep from crying, Dave.
Yeah, it's because week after week after week. So we would say, hey, listen, why don't you just do a little bit each day? And that's what we do. And we teach people how to, you know, take little chunks, and we call it a cookbook, how to take a recipe for success. And if you did that every single day, you would succeed. Because here's the other underlying principle. My goal is to get, let's say, 2 appointments a day. I can't control who's giving me the appointments. I can't control who's going to say yes in my sales cycle. I can't control who says no. But I can control my own actions and my own behaviors. So if I say every single day, I'm going to make 20 outbound dials. I'm going to send 6 LinkedIn letters. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. If I know that my activities, if I reversed my sales funnel to how many sales I needed and what my activities were, if I got all the way to behaviors that I had to do on a daily basis, the whole premise is if I did that every day, then it's like eating an elephant a little bit at a time, that at the end, I would hit my quota. And it is true. And the people who use this concept called the cookbook typically blow through their quotas a quarter ahead of time. I mean, it's amazing what goes on here.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And it reminds me of, for this podcast, I enjoy reading all the books beforehand, but I don't do it all at once. So I make a point of, I better get reading. So like tomorrow I'm going to start on the next week's, but
right.
It doesn't take a lot of time, but it's just something where I know I better get to it, or it's going to start.
Versus I'm going to spend 30 minutes a day getting it done, right?
Right, right. Well, so that, yeah. I'll do it 30 minutes a day and I'm good to go. Yeah. It's all it takes.
Exactly.
So let's go on. I wanted to ask you about one topic that came up under, I think it was the qualification section. And why is it that doing a debrief after a sales call actually increases your likelihood of success? And is it because debriefs are so rare?
It is. I mean, I think, first of all, I think if you did a pre-call plan on every call, your success goes up. And most of us don't do that because we rely on our history, I mean, our experience. And a debrief, most of us don't do a debrief. And I think a debrief allows you, while it's fresh in your mind, to ask some questions. Hey, what could I have done differently? What did I do well? What could I have done better? Hey, what questions should I have asked that I didn't get to? Mm-hmm. Hey, what are the things that I need to jot down for next time? But what normally happens, Douglas, if you don't do a debrief, especially with a team, right?
Yeah.
Everyone goes on their way. Everyone thinks everyone else is doing the follow through. Nothing occurs. And we don't say, hey, what questions should we have asked that we didn't ask from your perspective over there in finance? And what about you, marketing? And so I'm getting great data, but it also, you know, from a sales technique, it allows me to start the call next time in a completely different manner. So, you know, salespeople have memories like fishermen and golfers, right? Every time we think about a call, it gets better and better and better. So let's think about a guy that just, he goes on a call today and it's horrific. I mean, it is really bad. Well, when he leaves, and he's walking to his car or to the tube, you say to yourself, that was pretty bad. That was a bad call right there. And so now you're the next day you're stuck in traffic, you're thinking about it, and you say to yourself, I've had worse. Honestly, if I think back to that call, I've had some worse ones, you know.
I'll be okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next day comes or the next, you know, and then you say, well, listen, honestly, based on what I had to work with, I think I did pretty good. I mean, that prospect was just not, you know, not a happy person, didn't do this, didn't do that. And then when you're at the sales meeting, you know, you hear, well, you should have seen it. They said this, I said that then, and they said this, and I told them they weren't qualified, so they're not on my prospect list. I mean, really? That's what happened? You know, so we kind of forget those things. So I think your brain is your best friend. It protects you. So do a debrief when things are fresh and you know, and you can do roles and responsibilities of who's doing what and when, and who's going to call the prospect or the customer to talk about this. All that should be done right after it. And a good rule of thumb, Douglas, if your call is an hour, your pre-call should be 30 minutes, and your post-call should be, a debrief should be really about 15 to 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like with this team sport, which is enterprise selling, you really mm-hmm. do have a responsibility to all the other people that are working on this.
You really do.
Yeah. So let me ask you, this is based on, again, one other, you know, one of the many things I've learned in Sandler training, that not every client would necessarily be a good client. And you talk about in the enterprise world, it's just as important to know when to exit a current opportunity as it is to know when to begin one. What are some of the things that that people should know about that, like unmitigated risks?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's the mindset that it's okay to disqualify. How many sales organizations actually even say that out loud, right?
Yeah. No, I don't think many. I can remember working for another company and everything was an opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. You got strokes for shoving stuff through the funnel, even if it was a purple squirrel, right? So they would just, that's awesome. But in my company at Sandler, we actually give you as many compliments and strokes for disqualifying as qualifying. So in this world, think about the money and the time that increases as you go through the sales process. Enterprise selling really means that you're going to have a group of people most times in the sales process. So you've got flights, you've got manpower, you're putting together docs, you know, you've got people from different countries that are involved in the sales process. Your cost goes up geometrically. Most, an average sales call in the technical field is $35,000. And that's if it was just you and I doing it. Can you imagine if you had six or seven? And Douglas, if the deal gets that big, guess what happens? Here comes management, right? Because they're going to take credit for our deal. So they show up. We got a lot of people there.
Yeah.
So I think you have to look at
and there's some unrealistic expectations if it's gotten that far.
Hey, listen, does our product really hit their needs? Is it one of the top couple initiatives that they want? You know, do we have in contractual stuff? Is there anything that's going to stop us? What are the risks, right?
Yeah.
There could be technical risks, could be business risks. There's a bunch of them that we could go through. And if the answer is the risk outweighs the benefit, then let's make a decision as quickly as possible. That's what that's about.
Yeah. My favorite concept in terms of a form in the book was the Pursuit Navigator. And it's got like two columns. And the left column is, these are the risks.
Right.
And the right column is the mitigation strategy. What are we doing? And if you've got a risk and no mitigation strategy, it's going to come back to haunt you. Almost like not sealing up each compartment of the Sandler submarine.
It's so true. It's so true. Yeah. And you know, we tend to deny that until it comes back to haunt you, right?
That's because we have happy years.
Exactly.
Or we're smoking the hopium.
Exactly.
So in the book, you quote David G. Allen, who said, "Not knowing your theme until you're finished is like using a scalpel to turn a kangaroo into Miss Universe." What the hell is he talking about, and what's a theme?
Well, listen, I think if you're going after and you know your value prop and you know your 30-second commercial and you guys were singing from the same hymn book, that's what we really need to do. And I think most of the time we don't spend the time up front really making sure that we're on the same page, mm-hmm. and everybody's They know what they're supposed to be doing. We know what the true issues are. We know what the buyer psychology is, because most times we just say, here's the business case, but we also should know who's who on the buying side. And we're working in a unified front. We should have all that stuff done up front. Most of the times it never happens, and it's a real problem. So I think as you start to get your talk tracks down, and here's my value props and all the theme and all the stuff that we would do that we all want to make sure that we're on the same page on, it's a key. It goes actually as a subtopic, it goes back to some of the thing that you said earlier, which is we really have to communicate. And that never happens. I mean, it's unrelated, but yet it's important, because most individual salespeople have never had to communicate anything. When you're in a team sell, and you know this, you have to over-communicate, because everyone's operating individually, and you have to act as one versus a fighter pilot, and everything just changes.
Now, David, there was one other thing in the book you talked about as it relates to enterprise selling, and I learned it a long time ago in Sandler training, and we use it for my company. And clients like it, we like it, and it's the concept of a monkey's paw. Can you explain that?
I can. So everybody, salespeople, our egos get in the way. We go after the big sale. So if I'm after a $10 million software package, I'm going after the 10 mil. But if you think about what 10 million is, that's a big decision. I'm probably going to have a ton of people involved on the buying side. Everyone's going to have input. It's probably a little longer sale, you know. So what's a monkey's paw? If you use the shipping industry, when a big cruise line comes into port, they don't throw that big rope over the side, because the people down below, it's like, you know, it's a foot and a half wide. They would crush them. So what
A personal injury lawsuit right
there. Exactly. So they have a tennis ball with some twine. They throw it from the deck. It's tied to the big rope, and they pull the little rope in until it gets to the big rope, and then they tie it off. So Sandler said, hey, wait a minute now. That big rope is like the $10 million sale. We should make it easy for them to do business with us. So instead of going in for 10 mil, couldn't we do a study, or can't we do something that's $200,000 or 1 million? And because that way, it's an easier decision for them. They haven't really totally committed to the overall project, so their anxiety goes down. But everything changes, because you're not a seller, you're a partner now. You get to walk the hallways. You're going to learn so much more when you're implementing and working with them. And it's very easy to make sure that you've gone from monkey's paw to the bigger sale, because you don't want to set it up as a flip. You say, hey, look, let's start here. If that goes well, let's just do this. But it's almost, Douglas, if I'm going to buy a vacation home and that's going to cost, let's say, just a million, a monkey's paw would be, can I rent that place for 2 weeks?
Right.
And if the answer is yes, then I'm either in or out, right? I mean, that's what happens. And that's really what a monkey's paw is. Get a smaller sale, easier decision, nest yourself into that customer base, and it's a much easier proposition for you as a salesperson.
And you can make sure that they're going to be a good customer for you.
Well, there you go. You're going to find if it's a keep, right?
Yeah. Last question I wanted to ask you about in the book was about the client-centric satisfaction tool.
Love that tool.
Explain why a lot of companies' customer satisfaction scores may be completely meaningless, and how this works. And full disclosure, we're stealing this. I was not familiar with this, but we're going to start using it for clients.
Yeah, this is a home run. So everyone says, hey, we've got high customer satisfaction, or we care about that. But here's the mistake that most companies make. They say, here are 10 things. Why don't you judge us on how wonderful we are? And it would be, you know, customer service and blah, blah, blah. But the downside is you told them what the criteria was. The magic here in this tool is to say, hey, why don't we ask them, what are the top 3 things that you would expect from us now that you're our customer, in order to make this relationship 100% satisfactory to you? What is it? Now, most people
you could
say,
go in with maybe 12 as a starter.
Of course. But look, if you pick the 3, and I've done this for years, no one's ever said deliver world-class sales training. They already expect that. You know what they say? David, I want you to share with me what's going on in the marketplace. David, I want you to help me if you find huge gaping talent holes within my organization. I want you to bring, if there's a problem, I need you to tell me up front. I don't want to hear it from my people. And so I would mark that down because when I'm talking to that executive, I know that's important to them. And here's the other magic. When I talk to other people in the buying cycle, they have different satisfaction criteria. So now I get to manage individual buying network satisfaction criteria, which is awesome. And then, now if I move forward, let's say that I had three pieces of satisfaction with a person, and now I'm doing a quarterly business review. And I sit down with that person, I say, here are the three things that you wanted from me in order to make sure that, you know, 100% satisfied. Number one, how am I doing there? And if they said, hey, you got an A on this one. You're killing it. That's awesome. You got an A on that one, but you got a D on this other one. Now, let's just stop for a second. It's probably the first time that the client has actually said out loud, you're doing an awesome job in those two areas, mm-hmm. right? So now they're validating. And let's assume you got A's on everything. If you got A's on everything, you're less likely to have your competition come in and say, hey, we could do it better. They've already verbalized out loud that you're killing it. So that's mm-hmm. that's not going to happen. But let's assume you did get a D. Well, most people say, well, that tool stinks. I got a D. Well, you already had a D. What this tool allows you to do.
Now you know.
Exactly. Because, you know, if you have a lot of little pain, and a lot of little, you know, pokes at the bear here with the customer, they're eventually going to leave you. I would love to know when my customer is not happy because they don't normally tell you, right? People don't like, you know, they don't like that confrontation. But if I say, how am I doing? You got a D. Oh, wait a minute. I'm so sorry. What do I need to do to make sure that that's not a D ever again? And they tell me how to fix it, which is another great sales tactic because we're co-creating our outcome. I love this tool.
It's great. So somebody could come in, you could say, well, here's what some other customers have evaluated us on. And they can say, okay, well, we like some of those, but there's like three or four others that are really important to us, which is like, holy cow, I'm glad I asked. And then they can weight which ones are most important.
Yep.
And then they're going to be more invested in giving you an honest answer instead of something like, on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to recommend our company?
They're a criteria, right? That's the thing that's perfect.
Yeah.
I love that tool.
It's great. I was not familiar with it. And like I said, I'm stealing it. So if readers took only one thing away from the book, David, what would you hope it would be?
I think, A, it's a journey. You know, you have to know your part inside and out, so therefore you can focus on your customer. I think most of us don't go in with knowing our part inside and out, so we tend to process as you're talking as a customer, and I think that's a big mistake.
Interesting. So what books have inspired your work and career?
Well, let's see. In the past,
I turn around and look at the bookshelf there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we at Sandler we have like 18 books. I read them all. I love.
Well,
them.
But mention the book if you would. I'm putting words in your mouth. The one about riding a bicycle.
Well, that's the one that really turned when I was a early customer. Now I didn't buy into the Sandler selling system yet. I was forced to join. Right? I was forced to be a customer. I was not a willing participant. So I'm sitting in the class with my arms folded saying, oh my gosh, I'm here to support everyone else. You know, this is terrible. I'm introverted. They're never going to turn me into a salesperson because I thought salespeople were born, not made. And they gave me this, you can't teach a kid how to ride a bike at a seminar from David Sandler, which was a weird title, right? And I read it and I said, oh my gosh, I intuitively do some of these things because he didn't give you a step-by-step, you know, a sales process book. He said, here's how you use the Sandler tactics and strategies and concepts in your everyday life. And I read that thing multiple times. I was hooked. And then I just started practicing. And then I really jumped into the sales training stuff. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. I loved that book.
That's great. I should add that, there's a lot of sales seminars where they try to, you know, you want to send your sales team there once a year to get them all fired up, and they'll maybe be fired up for a day or so.
Sure.
But training like Sandler or some of the others, if it's done right, it's more like a marinade. It's just continuous exposure to best practices, and that's why I keep That's why they can't get rid of me at
Well, let's assume you went to a two-day seminar, right? If what I learned is when I go to a two-day seminar, it's a fire hose. I do get excited, which wears off. But sometimes they didn't talk about what I really needed to hear that particular day. Mm-hmm. But at Sandler, as you said, you can see the agenda for the next 5 months. You can pick and choose anything that you want to go to. It's like an open enrollment into college. And that way you can get little bits and pieces of what you want anytime you want it. And that really helped me because I got different problems on different times of my, you know, my career.
The other funny thing is that I observed is that, so I would be absorbing, I'd be marinating in all this, you know, Sandler system and this training. And then slowly but surely, I would start trying a few things. Mm-hmm. When I found myself in a sales situation and somebody would say to me, what does it cost? And one day I said, a lot.
Yeah.
Just more. And then occasionally I'd think, well, you know, maybe that Brad McDonald knows what he's talking about. So anyway.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, I think we normally try new things when we thought, hey, this deal is not going to happen, right? Because it's low risk. Right. Or I use it personally. I've always heard a couple things, Douglas. When I have talked to clients, you've been in it for 15 years, I hear things like, I wish I met you guys 20 years earlier. That would have really completely changed the trajectory of my profession. Number two, I wish my kids had access to this stuff because if I could help them know what I know now, that would be such a gift. And three, I use this in my personal life as much as my professional life. And it's so true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So like when my wife asks a question and I add a softening statement and a reverse and ask, it's an interesting question. Why ask?
Exactly.
And it's helped. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
Yeah, I've got one that I'm sitting here and it may be actually a little, I don't know when it was written, but it was Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So it really helps you understand what makes high achievers different. And to me, that intrigues me. So that's my next book.
Mm, great. Well, I think it's a pretty good chance it's going to be a good read for you because it was such a popular book.
Yeah.
So, Dave, how best can listeners learn more about you and Sandler Enterprise Selling Book?
Well, they can go to Sandler.com. They can certainly follow me on LinkedIn. But again, if you go to Sandler.com, you'll see all the things that we do. But Douglas, if any of your listeners want to crash a class, go to the button that says locate a training center. Just call one of our local trainers, say, hey, I'm going to crash a class, and go to that program on me. It's my gift to you. Learn as much as you can.
Oh, listeners, you've got to take advantage of it. In fact, the last 2 weeks, at my local Sandler training, they've had folks that were doing that, you know, checking it out. Mm-hmm. Also, on Twitter, you're at Dave_Matson, Matson.
Yep.
On Twitter, I'm Marketing Book. So if you're on Twitter, give us a shout. And we're also going to include a link to, in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com, a link to the Sandler Enterprise Selling Book page. And there's also another page on your site, which has lots of free training resources, all kinds of great stuff. So the name of the book is Sandler Enterprise Selling, Winning, Growing, and Retaining Major Accounts. The authors are Dave Matson and Brian Sullivan. Dave, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Douglas, and thanks for being a great client.
And that closes the book on episode 164 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat, and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Hey, could you do me a favor? If you're getting value from the Marketing Book Podcast, please hop on social media and share the love with your friends and colleagues and tell them about the Marketing Book Podcast. And please join us next time as we welcome Deb Calvert to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about the new book she has co-authored with James Kouzis and Barry Posner, Stop Selling and Start Leading, How to Make Extraordinary Sales Happen. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.